Welcome back. Midday Show. Hugh Douglas, Joe Giulio. You guys with us. 215-592-9494. That is how you hop aboard here. Ross Tucker is going to join the show coming up at 12:30. Perhaps a surprise coming your way at 12:45. We're working on something for you. Next hour, we have an investigation to open up here around the NFL and something we have to keep our eye on here in Philadelphia. Plus, kiss the baby as we'll eliminate another team after week three in the NFL. Complete last night. Let's go to Terrence here at Springfield. What's up, Terrence?
Hugh, Kyle, what's up, man?
What's up, buddy? How you feeling?
What's going on?
First of all, I want to touch on the Phillies, but I'm going to touch on the Eagles real quick. Sirianni shouldn't be overriding anything. Like, he's not good at that job. Last time I recall, didn't he give up play calling because he wasn't good at it?
Yes.
So his decision making isn't there. Sometimes I feel like Sirianni's out here like he's playing Madden or something. He's out there going for it on fourth down.
That's not the first time I've heard that today.
Yeah, like, this is not Madden. Like, you hear me, the guys I play on Madden, I'm like, bro, you're going to punt? No, I ain't punting. They go for it, turn everyone down, they end up getting 21 skunk. Like, Sirianni, it's 2 weeks in a row, you could have cost us. It could have been 2 weeks in a row, you cost us losses. So I feel like if Kellen Moore, he's born here to do a certain thing, and that's run this offense. So, Sirianni, you run the team. You manage the team and do that because you're not good at situational. You're not good at play calling. So leave it to Kellen Moore. He knows what he's doing. He's a veteran. He's been in this league for a long time, and he's proven. So on that note, Sirianni, you need to take a back seat because I don't like your philosophy. I don't like your press conferences because it looks like you don't know what you're talking about. You're just all over the place talking about stories in high school. Like, I don't want to hear that stuff. I want to talk about how you're going to get this team going in the right direction and not cost us games. As for the Phillies, I told Kyle, I don't want no celebrating right now, man. I want us to finish the job. The Phillies have done this 3 years in a row, right? They've been in the playoffs.
Yep.
They've done all this champagne popping and all that. This is the thing I hate about baseball. This is the one thing I hate about baseball. They celebrate like they won a championship when they make the playoffs, when they win a division, when they make it to the next round, in the World Series. That's stupid to me because it's giving the team a false hope like they already won something that they didn't win. So I feel like let's hold off and let's pop them bottles and celebrate when we win that World Series. Because we all know the last couple of years, we collapsed. And, man, the dancing on my own, it's okay. But, man, if we don't finish it this year, they got to trash that song.
Yeah, this is probably the last run they could use it for. And it probably will be. Terrence, we appreciate the call. Here's where I'm at on all the celebrations. And it is a uniquely baseball thing. It's like they celebrate after everything or, you know, on the path to a championship. This felt different because they hadn't won a division yet.
Yeah.
And it's a long journey to win this thing. I'm good with going crazy last night. I do wonder, and I expect, Hugh, let's say they win the division series, you know, a week from Tuesday, right, mm-hmm. against the Padres or Brewers or whoever. I think the first round victory celebration is going to be a little bit more subdued. It's old hat. I don't think the Astros, you know, they've been in the ALCS, what, 7 straight years? They've won some World Series.
Yeah.
I don't think they celebrate anymore after the first round the way they probably did 7 years ago, right?
They're used to this now. They expect to do it.
Now, that's what I think they'll celebrate. I just think it'll be a little more subdued. Now, if you make the World Series, that's hard, right? Like, go crazy again.
No joke.
And then the big one is the World Series. I expect you, though, if they win the first round series, they'll celebrate. I wouldn't imagine it'd be crazy, though.
No, they're probably going to still celebrate. But I was listening to him talk about last night how for Bryce, this is only the fifth time he's done it. Done it a couple times with the Nationals, I think.
And his first, well, obviously his first time here.
Yeah,
he won, I think, two or three with the Nats divisions. 12, 14, 16.
But the point
16?
Is this, they're hard to do. And so you should, I think that, since they've been doing it in baseball this long,
yeah.
I don't have a problem with it. But when you're in a situation where, you know, you've went to the second round and everything, I can see them toning it down a little bit and getting ready for the next one.
I have one exception because I'm with you. If they play the Mets in the first round in the NLDS and they beat them, I want them to act like the Mets acted when they won a game to get back 6 games in the division the other night. Like,
yes.
I don't think I can remember a group of weenies more than the New York Mets.
Well, led
this
by
year.
Alonso. He's a weenie.
And Nimmo. I think Nimmo is the ultimate weenie in all of baseball. I can't stand that dude. So if they beat the Mets, I want them to do all the little trots that Alvarez was doing around the bases, all of that stuff. I want them to rub it in their face. Because I can't stand that.
I do like that. All right, before we get to what Micah Parsons said about CJ GJ, we want to let you guys know, tomorrow night, our Schwarbaum Squad watch party at the Yards Tap Room. We're going to support Kyle and his foundation, Schwarber's Neighborhood Heroes. And we got to thank Yards, too. They just brought us a ton of great food for lunch. So what did you guys? You guys got the Carolina pulled pork sandwich?
Yeah, and it's some quesadillas.
How's that?
Got some quesadillas is nice.
Cheesesteak egg
cheese
rolls.
Cheesesteak egg rolls are so good, man.
Yeah,
their food there is great. We appreciate they brought me the roasted root vegetables. Salad, some hummus. They have everything there. You can experience the Yards Tap Room, the new menu, tomorrow night at the Schwarbaum Squad Watch Party. So, look, you go, you donate $10, or you purchase a Schwarber's Neighborhood Heroes camo t-shirt. The beers will be on Kyle, so just buy a t-shirt. The beers then are on Kyle. You heard me right. Support Kyle's foundation, and Kyle and his family are giving you a free Philly standard on him tomorrow night. First pitch, 6:05. For info, go to 94WIP.com. We'll be there tomorrow night at 6 o'clock. Can't wait for that. All right, so before we go any further with your phone calls here, CJ GJ, we know he was, he was very excited after the win on Sunday, and he was talking about how they're the best secondary, best line, and he was excited. He beat his former team, a team that, in his mind, gave up on him. Well, Micah Parsons, as he's apt to do, he chimed in on one of the big stories in the NFL. Here's Micah on CJ GJ and the celebration on Sunday.
The Saints are a very good team, and CJ Gardner-Johnson said they're pretenders. They're not. They ain't no contenders. They're pretenders, and they have Derek Carr. Remember that. I don't know who CJ Gardner think he is, bro. I mean, we've been dealing with this cat for a while. I mean, we just got to be a little bit real right here. Like, I think Derek Carr has validated himself way before CJ has ever done. Like, in the most respectful way, I'm not taking away anything, but Derek Carr has been a Pro Bowl quarterback. Before, highest paid quarterback before. Let's be real. Like, Derek Carr has always been a pretty damn quarterback.
Pretty. Like, you mean attractive?
I think he means pretty good. He left that word out, the good word.
Pretty damn good.
Yeah.
I would have rolled him until he told me
like,
no.
He's a pretty quarterback. I was like, attractive? Is he attractive? I don't know.
What would you make of Micah there?
I understand him giving Derek Carr his flowers. You try not to be disrespectful. I think in the moment, I didn't take what CJ GJ said, I guess the way Micah did. I guess Micah's validating the fact that they beat the brakes off the Cowboys. So that's why he's saying what he said.
I think that's a lot of it, yeah.
You know. But no, I didn't have a problem with I didn't have a problem with what CJ did. They played with a lot of bravado last week. The thing that I want them to do now is keep it up.
Do you happen to see CJ's response to Micah?
I'm all about pettiness. I went on Twitter.
You saw what was going on?
Yeah, and I saw the responses that people had to CJ GJ compared to Micah Parsons. Well, people are ruthless.
The comment section is.
Yeah,
CJ
fire.
Chimed in after Micah kind of ripped him there and said, quote, fam, the league knows who I am. Forget the narrative. At Micah Parsons. You could check my track record and how I overcame a lot. Won a lot more playoff games than you too, my guy. And then the salute emoji.
No, I mean, that's a fact. That's a fact. But boy, like, not to be that guy, but boy, when you have other people that are on the sidelines that chime in and they start checking resumes, it got a little real.
I think the funniest part of that audio is that we've been dealing with this cat for a while now.
Yeah.
Sounds like a police officer, like, damn it, this dude again. Like, yeah. We gotta go arrest this guy.
He's on the run again.
Yeah,
we had
a good win this weekend. But yeah, Micah was trying to justify that ass whooping that they took a couple weeks
ago.
That's
exactly what, because if the Saints are pretenders, what are the Cowboys?
Yeah,
yeah. That's what
good,
that was.
We're a good team, too.
He's in his feelings. Chris, it Sewell's up. What's up, Chris?
Hey, guys, sorry. I tried to get in yesterday. I didn't get in. I was down in New Orleans, and I wanted to talk about the game. But let's get to your today's question. Joe, if I understand your question correctly, you're asking, should the head coach have the right to overrule?
Yes,
right?
Yes. That's what we're debating
today.
Yep.
Not do we want him to.
Right. Should he?
All right, because I had a pretty heated argument with Kyle before this call.
And Kyle's an idiot.
With all due respect to Kyle, you know, it is like arguing with your two-year-old, and it is because, all right, we won't say because he's the head coach, but he's in charge. He's responsible. So, yes, at any given moment, he has the right to stick his two cents in, and if needed,
overrule if he thinks he has a better idea. Did it work? No. And I want to go on the record. I wanted Sirianni fired after the end of last year. But now that he's back, now that he's a head coach, parent, he has the responsibility for these children. And he's in a no-win situation. This team wins a Super Bowl, he'll get no credit. It's going to be Jalen Hurts. It's Saquon Barkley. It's A.J. Brown. They don't make the playoffs, he gets all the blame, no matter injuries, no matter how bad those guys play, whatever.
Chris, I agree with you on this. I agree with what you said at the end
there.
That's
what he signed up for.
Yeah, but he did sign up, but the Eagles created this scenario. Like, there's almost like, do it our way or we're going to be mad. Well, there's a natural element to human nature. Of push comes to shove. I'm the head coach. I'm going to make a call. I'm going to give you my opinion. I'm going to say we're doing it this way. Like, it's almost unrealistic what we're expecting out of this guy now.
I completely agree, Joe. And you're right. The Eagles created the scenario. This Eagles management is the same Eagles management that we finally had enough of Andy Reid. And Andy Reid was the complete opposite of this guy. He would just got to do a better job, got to do a better job. He wouldn't give you anything. I agree with you, Hugh. He's a long talker. He gives you too much. Your advice to him going forward is the best advice. Less is more. And just a little context. Are they calling for the head coach's head in Cincinnati right now? Are they calling for Mike Shanahan's head right now? Or Kyle Shanahan's head right now? Dallas. You know, so let's put a little context on this. I'm not a huge Nick Sirianni fan. He's not blameless, but he does have the responsibility of this football team, win or lose. And if they don't perform, yeah, fire them. But right now they're 2-1.
Well, they are.
Should be 3-0. Should be.
Yep.
3-0.
I agree.
Could have been if not for the play at the end. Chris, I agree. I mean, I think you make a lot of good points there. And there is also the point of this to where it's – I keep going back to human nature. Everyone knows – he knows if they don't perform, he's getting fired. So, like, the reality is he's going to try to add something on game day. Now, Hugh, the problem is he may be going too far. He may be going too far on game day, and that becomes a problem here. If he goes too far and he puts them in bad situations and he's trying to talk his way through this thing – you know, that long talking never works, you.
No, it isn't. And I think that coach's best strategy throughout this whole process is just to lay out and let it play out. I mean, that's all you can do. Because at this point now, at this point in the season, you're going to get more questions. Every time there's a controversial call that's made, the question's going to come up. Hey, who made that call? And it's going to be spun in a way where, you know, they're going to try to talk around it, but you have to ask. As a reporter, you have to ask those questions. And he needs the best thing that he can do for himself is, number one, maintain his composure and just answer it to the best of his ability. If anybody asks you who's making the play call, stay away from that.
Don't open up that can of worms.
No, don't open up that can of worms.
Let's get to that and a lot more with our next guest. Yeah, you know who it is. You know who it is, Ross. It's Ross Tucker, Hugh Douglas.
Hey!
Ross Tucker. Ross Tucker Football Podcast. You hear him on CBS with the games at Ross Tucker NFL. Ross, how you doing today?
Ross.
I am doing fantastic. I'm telling you guys, no matter how I'm doing, I'm always doing great when I come on and you guys play a Taylor song and I start to smile.
Ross, help me out. I forgot what school you came from. What school you go to? You went to one of them Ivy League schools, correct?
Yeah, I went to Prince University. It's the number one school in the country. No big deal.
No, I'm saying, so Ross, I need to ask you, in that situation, before the half.
15 seconds to go.
If you're coaching a football team, Ross, with your Ivy League education.
Sure.
What are you doing in that situation?
Oh, Hugh, I am so glad you asked this. Guys, I can't tell you. I think this is a really, really big deal and really interesting. Because most of the time when Sirianni has made decisions the past couple years, aggressive or not, I think you could lean on the fact that the Eagles have arguably the best analytics department in the NFL and that they're going with whatever model they have that indicates that that's the best decision. And so we can all acknowledge, okay, that they're going to be aggressive or they're going to do what the analytics tell them to do. That's why the end of the first half was so fascinating. Guys, there's not an analytical model in the world that would say going for it was the right decision there. I don't believe for a second that the people that talk to Sirianni during games to tell him what he should do or not do. I don't believe for a second that they told him to go. He more or less did that totally on his own, which I find very interesting. I'm not opposed to it. I do think sometimes coaches can use their gut or can use their instincts, but in that particular situation, the cost-benefit analysis is not even close. Even if you get it, you have to call timeout, and then you must throw one pass into the end zone. There could be a penalty. You could get sacked. You could get tackled short of the line again. That was the worst decision I think I've seen Sirianni make in terms of going for that and not kicking the field goal. But what's particularly interesting to me about it is, you know, the Eagles are a team that relies heavily on data, and he went against the data there. And I just find that fascinating because usually, I guess I'm under the impression that typically, you know, he is very much in line with the data and what all the numbers guys are telling him. I mean, they have a guy that his whole job is the game management, clock management stuff. So I just find that whole dynamic to be fascinating that he basically kind of went, I don't want to say went rogue, but he kind of did his own thing there.
Russ, the other part element to the play wasn't just the decision to go for it on fourth down. Sirianni volunteered after the game that he made the play call. It was his call on the play they ran, which obviously didn't work. But then that opens up a whole another can of worms. Russ, you of all of us here in this conversation, you're the only one that was on the offensive side. He was a defensive player I've been watching since high school. Russ, is that common? Is this over the top? Like, he's not the play caller, Kellen Moore is, but he's an offensive head coach. Take us into how it typically works. Do you think it's, you know, is it right that he's overruling him or changing a play, or is this kind of normal for a non-play caller, but that's his area of expertise to say, I want to run this play?
So the interesting part about that, Joe, is, you know, as a player, you never really know for sure how often the head coach overrules the coordinator, but that is very much a thing with the head coach's side of the football, right? Like, I don't think that Sirianni would ever do that with Vic Fangio, but I'm pretty confident he did it a number of times last year with Brian Johnson, right? Like, Brian Johnson was the play caller last year. He was the OC, but I'd be stunned if there weren't multiple times where Sirianni, you know, felt like he had a feel for something, felt good about something, and said, hey, Brian, let's, and sometimes it might just be, let's run it here. Sometimes it might be, let's take a shot here. Sometimes it might be the actual play. Like I said, hard to know exactly how often coaches do that, but definitely that happens, I would say, more often than people realize. You don't usually hear about it because it's not really in anyone's best interest, right? If the play is not successful, the head coach doesn't want it out there that he overruled. And even if the play is successful, it's still not something that you want to put out there a lot, that the head coach is overruling the coordinator, more or less for what we're going through right now, right? More or less for this conversation, because then it's always the conversation of, well, how do you know when to overrule or not to overrule, when to go your own way or not, which is basically similar to what we just said about the decision to go for on fourth down at all.
Yeah, you almost twist yourself into a pretzel to figure the whole thing out. Ross Tucker joining us here. Ross, what did you make of the play of Jalen Hurts on Sunday? Yeah, very productive, completion percentage well over 70, and that's without Lane, without the right guard, without both receivers at the end, led a game-winning drive. But, of course, there's two more turnovers, including interception in the end zone. Ross, what did you make of how Jalen played in this game?
I would give him a B, I guess. You know, one of the things I think is interesting, a couple things. He still, his pocket presence leaves a decent amount to be desired for me. I still think he leaves at times when he shouldn't and does not. You know how, like, remember back in the day, Dan Marino always would just slide a little bit or step up. I mean, Dan Marino ran like a 7-second 40, yet he was such a good pocket mover. Brady's obviously was fantastic at it. I still think that's an area for improvement. For Hurts, the two things that really jumped out to me about this game, guys, it still looks to me like there are times on a zone read where he pulls the ball and runs it when it looks to me like he should be giving the ball to the running back.
Mm.
I almost wish they would call more just design runs. And then also, the same thing on the RPO game. There are times where he'll pull it and throw it, and again, it looks like there's a big hole for the running back. The thing that's so interesting, I want you guys to watch it. We'll see what happens Sunday, because last year, obviously, Bowles and the Bucks blitzed the crap out of Jalen. But if you watch the Saints, no, I think the offensive line did a good job. They did. And they were giving him really a crazy amount of time. But, and Hugh can speak to this better than I can, Joe, because I'm quite sure Hugh probably hates it. But the Saints, on a lot of those snaps, they were cage rushing Joe, which means their primary focus is to not let the quarterback escape, as opposed to trying to beat your offensive lineman no matter what and trying to get a sack. That was secondary. What was primary for the Saints was to bull rush, was to keep Hurts in the pocket. Dennis Allen, the D coordinator and head coach for the Saints, he basically decided, and by the way, I think he made a wrong choice, but he basically decided, I'm going to make Jalen Hurts beat me throwing it from the pocket without A.J. Brown. I don't think he can do it. I'd rather have him do that than have him scramble or run around. There's plays, if you go back and watch, where those guys aren't even really trying to sack him. They're just trying to keep him in the pocket and make him throw the football. And I think he did a pretty good job taking advantage of that.
Well, he did. Yeah, I mean, they were able to win the game on a throw from the pocket he made at Dallas. Got it. Ross, let's end with this. Two-part question for you. Did the Chicago Bears draft the wrong quarterback at number one? And how big of a problem do we have on our hands in the NFC East? Because Jaden Daniels looks like the real deal for the Commanders right now.
So the answer to your first question is yes. The Bears did make the wrong choice, just like the Panthers did the year before. Quite frankly, just like the Jags did the year before, taking Trayvon Walker over Aiden Hutchinson. And that is not just based on a three-game sample size. It struck me so much, Joe. Every guy, almost every like quarterback guru, right? Greg Cosell and Chase Daniel and Orlovsky and Lewis Riddick, everybody that came on the Ross Tucker Football Podcast before the draft, they all raved about Jaden Daniels. Phil Sims, I'll add another one. And they all either said they liked him more than Caleb Williams, or the way they talked gave that indication. So I think that's important context, that it's not just the three games so far. And he's a major problem for the Eagles. He's a major problem for the entire NFC East. Listen, I've been on teams with bad quarterbacks, average, good, and I was in New England with Brady, right? When you have a quarterback that you think is a star, a franchise guy, it changes the entire organization. I'm telling you right now, if you were down there in Washington, even the sales guys, right, the social media, their chest is out. They're walking on their toes. That whole organization now believes, and especially you combine that belief with a new head coach who's a positive guy in Dan Quinn, you can't tell those guys that they're not going to win the division now, right? Like they really think we got the guy, we got the right coach, we got a star quarterback, the sky's the limit. The Commanders are going to be a problem the rest of the year. They might even be the biggest threat to the Eagles, more so than the Cowboys.
Don't tell Joe.
Yeah, well, I've been on this since the summer. I mean, I didn't even think he'd be this good, but I feel this coming, Ross. He had more touchdown passes than incompletions last night. That throw he made
and
getting hit.
Don't pick yet.
Insane.
And they haven't punted in two games. They haven't punted since week one of the season. It's I mean, they're fun to watch, but I do think it's a problem for the Eagles. Ross, we appreciate you hopping on. As always, have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week, Ross. Thank you.
Sounds great. See you guys.
Have a good one.
Ross Tucker, NFL. Oh, boy, that was I didn't know where he was going to go with that answer, but he was strong that the Bears picked the wrong quarterback. Daniels looks like the real deal. 215-592-9494. That is how you hop aboard. We have a surprise guest coming up next. Someone I once talked to about the division being over. And it is over now.
Let's go.
That's next. Midday Show, Sports Radio 94 WIP.